This is a HeadGum Podcast.
I have to say what I feel. Miami has so much appeal. A great place to get a seafood meal. Miami. Miami, Miami, you've got style.
Picture it, Los Angeles, 2016. Welcome to Out on the Lanai, the only Golden Girls podcast you will ever need to listen to. I'm H. Allen Scott, and Carrie is away on a very special golden assignment, so I'm holding down, our guest is laughing at that, I'm holding down the fort here, for we watched probably a very memorable episode. I think it's one of the more memorable ones. It's called The Artist, and it was the last episode that aired in 1987, December 19th, 1987. It's where Blanche, Rose, and Dorothy all sort of, like, try to vie for this sculptor, this Hungarian sculptor who's in town or lives there, no one knows, his attention to get them to sculpt him, or sculpt her, one of the girls. Anyway, and then meanwhile, Sophia is having this, like, practical joke situation going on where she's essentially terrorizing Dorothy specifically, but all of the women, but it's mainly Dorothy that gets it the worst. A great episode. Our guest, though, is awesome. He's been on the podcast before, so it's not a surprise, but it's also kind of an announcement because Carrie, of course, has been away off and on special golden assignment, as I said. So we're instituting a new sort of guest host to fill in for whenever Carrie and I can't be here. And this guy is awesome. He writes on the TV Land show Younger. He has this great live show called Haunting Renditions, which is like epically awesome. And you've seen him on Broad City, and you've heard him here before. Guys, Elliot Glazer.
Hey.
Hey. Hey, it's so weird to listen. I want to give you guys sort of a setup of, like, how this works in my apartment. So, like, literally, Elliot is just sitting there watching me talk about him to, like, a mystery audience that is you through the mic. I'm looking at the mic as if the audience is there. But it's weird, right?
It's a little weird.
It's a little weird.
It's fine.
It's a little weird.
Wait, so did we say that this episode was a season finale?
No, it wasn't a season finale. It was the last episode of 1987.
Got it.
Yeah. So, you know, they closed out the year with a gay episode.
It's not my favorite.
Well, yeah, but you're, like, so we know your history with the Golden Girls. You've been on the show before. But just to give you guys sort of a refresher of Elliot's history with the Golden Girls, Elliot and I did a show in New York called Golden Girls versus Designing Women. It was a trivia show. It was a big hit. People liked it. And the reason why I know Carrie, I think, is because Carrie had initially come to you about, she knew that you liked the Golden Girls, but you were back and forth between New York and Los Angeles. You're here now.
Yes.
But you were back and forth, and you had suggested for me.
Yeah.
So that's how Carrie and I know each other, and one of the ways. Also, Gabby Dunn was a part of that circle as well. So Elliot, also like me, has a very rad B. Arthur tattoo. Yours is B. Arthur centric.
Yes, it's specific to the lady, the legend, the
icon.
She's my favorite Golden Girl, but also just as an actress.
We've never talked about the tattoo. So, like, when did you get the tattoo, and what inspired, not so much, we know why you got it, because you love B. Arthur, but what inspired that particular picture of B. Arthur, like,
all of it? I got it in 2010, so 6 years ago, and I got it pretty soon after she passed away. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember where you were when she passed away?
Yes, I was at my friend Jackie's house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were at her parents' house in New Jersey, and my friends all sort of took pleasure in, poking at me for my Golden Girls fandom.
Oh.
And, you know, for a long time, and so this was sort of a bittersweet moment for them, in that they were, I think, humanely just, you know, sad that someone had passed away. But it was also an opportunity to rib me for my, very barely ironic love of B. Arthur.
Yeah.
So it sort of was an amalgamation, I guess, of
see, I was also love, in New York. I didn't have any of that, though. People genuinely were concerned for me, too.
These were my close friends who were like, They weren't happy that she passed away, but they were just like, here he goes, you know.
He's gonna fall apart.
Yeah.
I didn't fall apart, though. I did. I was on 6th Avenue. This was before, it was 2010, right?
Yeah.
And maybe 2009. And I had an iPhone, I think, but it wasn't like now where you get instant notifications of, you know, new stuff. And so my mother called me. I speak to my mom every day, so it wasn't a surprise to have my mother call me. But my mom called me and she was like, "Are you sitting down?" And I'm like, "No, I'm on 6th Avenue and 19th Street. Yeah. What's going on?" And she tells me that Bea Arthur died. And I start to cry right outside the Bed Bath & Beyond there
on
6th Avenue. Also, I saw Kiefer Sutherland there once, and he had a lot of bags.
Really?
Random off story. I was so upset. I think I was more upset when she died than when Rue died, or when Estelle died. Because Estelle, we had Estelle anticipated.
We that was a slow, steady
decline.
Departure. Yeah, decline.
Yeah.
Bea Arthur was, I think, more of a surprise, because she was so private that
been promoting the year prior, I think. They had just been promoting Maud, sort of, 20th anniversary?
Something like
anniversary.
That.
Yeah, and I remember she was on The View, and she was blind as fuck. And her and I think Rosie O'Donnell was hosting then, and she had to be led around the stage because she couldn't see.
I'm glad I've never seen that.
Yeah, I saw it. That's it was painful. A lot. But she was great.
Yeah.
She was on. She was Sprite. She was doing her thing, but she just couldn't see.
Yeah. Ugh, that's too hard for me to watch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I you know, she's my favorite in that as a comedy writer and comedian, I think she is just... She's just so masterful with the way that she, I don't know, just the simplicity of how she does comedy. To me, it's like, it just inspires me as a writer and as a comedian.
Yeah.
And of course, Betty White is also brilliant, and I think Rue McClanahan was underrated.
I do too. Yeah.
And Estelle Getty, despite her timing issues, which I, you know, openly take issue with, she still was also fantastic.
Yeah.
They all were. And of course, they all worked together really well. But Bea Arthur always had a special place in my heart.
If you watch, sort of, speaking of Rue and Betty, if you watch, I've been watching a lot of Mama's Family lately.
Sure.
Both of whom are on the first season of Mama's Family. And
who?
Both Betty White and Rue McClanahan.
Sure.
Yeah. And if you watch their performances and how vastly different they are from their Golden Girls performances, you really see the range of, especially Rue McClanahan.
Well, yeah, and her on Maude, she was so straight-laced.
Yeah.
And Betty White was so different
on Mary Tyler Moore show. Yeah.
That it really shows that these women have such range.
It's huge, huge range,
and,
yeah.
Bea Arthur, too. I mean, even like...
Bea Arthur is the... Maude is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And Dorothy is Hillary Clinton. That's
yes.
what we... I was texting with avid listeners, Philip Campbell, last night. And Brandon Shade, that Maude is Bernie Sanders completely.
Maude is Bernie. I was going to say, she's so loud and, like, cantankerous on that show. And also, it's like, I mean, you know, I don't mean to, I don't mean this is a body-shaming issue at all. But
shame it.
No, I just there's a very distinct physical difference in Maude versus Dorothy, mm-hmm. in that on Maude, she was heavier, she was puffier, and she hadn't had her facelift yet.
She looks... vastly different
vastly
on the two series.
Different. And then on the Golden Girls, she's like spindly
and
thin and has a, should I say, impressive bone structure? Whatever happened on her face, whether it was weight loss or...
I think it was a mix of weight loss and her facelift.
I think so too. It was like a beautiful facelift.
It was a
facelift.
Very good facelift.
Very good.
Yeah. I was... And there's one episode where she talks about it.
No, she talks about her getting her eyes done.
Oh, her eyes done. Well, as close as
you'll get.
Yeah.
She definitely had a great facelift.
Yeah.
God, I'm obsessed with plastic surgery on old women.
Really?
I just think it's so... And men, too. I think plastic surgery is so fascinating.
You know the Ken doll guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he messaged me on Scruff once.
I remember this.
And he wanted me to feed his mouth. I hope he's listening.
You should explain that the Ken doll is a...
It's a human person who had
so much
plastic surgery
to make himself pretty much look like a Ken doll.
Now, keep in mind, I will say to his credit right now, so that I can't get sued, that there's a good chance that it may have been someone impersonating him. I'll say that. And I'm just saying this for benefit of the doubt.
Right.
It may have been someone who was impersonating him. So, Ken doll, if you genuinely wanted to start a relationship with me, you can... contact me at hallandscott.com.
There you go, Kendall. nameless man.
So, yeah, well, I'm glad that you can come in and fill in co-hosting for Carrie.
My pleasure.
Because it's going to be fun.
My pleasure.
There are some fun guests coming up. And
very excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So let's get to this episode. It's weird.
I'll start off on a sour note by saying it's not one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Because I think our difference. When it comes to the Golden Girls, is you're an earlier seasons guy, and I'm a later seasons guy.
Well, I don't know. People tend to give that to me. I like all seasons.
You do like all seasons.
I will watch all of them endlessly.
As will I.
Yeah.
But
I'll never skip something just because of it was on an earlier year.
Yeah, I will. No, that's not true. Yes, I will. There are a couple, like the one with Blanche's sister and the kidney. Never watch it.
That's a serious one.
There's a handful of them that I'm just have no interest. But for me, again, and I've said this, I think, on earlier podcast episodes, that for me, the later seasons, 5, 6, and 7, are more elastic.
Yeah.
And they're more, not necessarily improv-based, although there is
They're more absurd.
They're more
absurd. The stories become more heightened and sort of like
fantastical.
Silly.
Yeah, they're silly and they're fantastical, and there's room for fantasy, although I guess...
You see that in this episode. You see the start of this. I mean, there's a lot of... Well, of course, Sophia has her practical jokes. So there's a lot of just sort of, like, slapstick humor.
Yeah, but the fantasy that comes into 5, 6, and 7 is a sort of departure from logic.
Yeah.
So, like, like with Blanche hearing her grandmother's voices, you know, her grandmother's voice in the old house, and, like, just there's a lapse in logic.
And Sophia jumping off the house and landing on Rose. That's a great episode.
It's my favorite. It's fantastic.
Really? It's your favorite
one? It's not my favorite, but it's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Which one is your favorite?
Of all time?
Yeah.
Oh, probably, it's Witness. It's the one with Rose's boyfriend who turns out to be the cheese man.
Yes. Yeah.
But again, like, for me, my favorite part of that episode is the very beginning when Dorothy's watching TV, Sophia comes out, sits next to her, and is looking at her backwards through binoculars.
Yeah.
And then she gets up to leave and goes, "Well, I'm off." And Dorothy goes, "That would be my diagnosis."
I don't really have a favorite episode. I can't really pick one. But if I had to, like, choose one immediately, I would say the AIDS episode.
Oh,
I love when Rose gets AIDS.
It is a good one. Hypothetically gets AIDS.
I just like saying she gets AIDS. Because, for all intents and purposes, she lives that episode as if she has AIDS.
It's pretty incredible.
I have the art cup. Carrie gave me that art cup.
Oh, yeah.
I have an art cup in my apartment that you know, is reminiscent of Sophia's
I'll say the other part of Witness that I love is when, because Sophia can't find her glasses, she uses Sal's sunglasses with prescription lenses in them, and she walks into the kitchen, just stands in silence, and Dorothy looks right at the audience and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, Roy Orbison." It's brilliant.
That's really good.
Fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
And also, I don't even think, when I think about that joke, Roy Orbison had jet black hair.
Yeah.
So it's literally just the fact that she's wearing dark sunglasses.
But if you think about it, at the time, where Roy Orbison was in popular culture was right around when Pretty Woman came out, same year. So it was like there was a whole moment of Roy Orbison.
God,
happening.
I just love that. I just love that. Yeah. I love that sequence. And the difference between those episodes and this one, The Artist, is that they're not packaged up tightly.
Yeah.
The later episodes are certainly structured.
Yeah.
But there's room for a little fluidity there, and the jokes kind of bleed over a little bit into one another.
Yeah.
In this episode, in The Artist, it's so strict.
Yeah.
It's like...
There's A story, B story.
And the B story doesn't even lead... Like, the practical jokes thing literally...
There's no ending to it, really.
There's no beginning, there's no middle, there's no end. It just happens in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And it happens once at the museum.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's such a...
It happens three times. No. Yeah, you're right.
What happens at the gallery when she...
It happens at the gallery. Yeah, so let's get into it. So, Sophia, at the very beginning of the episode, Sophia gets... Nice pants.
Thanks.
Sophia gets home, and she's just wearing a knit...
Trench coat, sort of.
But it's like a tweed trench coat, yes. And she walks in, and she's kind of stumbling in.
Once again, sir, I'll just interject once again a moment that both you and I are like... Who would have that in the middle of Miami?
Yeah, tweed in Miami.
With a tweed trench coat in Miami, but so be it.
Sophia, she might be cold.
Yeah.
So she's also, we find out, so Dorothy is there watering plants, and we find out that Sophia is naked underneath that trench coat because in a somewhat Maury at the center or something, got juice on her outfit.
Yeah,
thus
prune juice.
He was going to clean the outfit, practical joke situation, and so she's naked now. She flashes Dorothy, and we learn about this whole thing. So she now has to get back at Maury. Like, right. She has to figure out ways to get back at Maury.
Right.
That's really the start of this B story.
And that's pretty much it.
That's it. That's the whole story. Well, then a really funny line is Rose... Rose comes out. Rose acknowledges what you and I first acknowledged. So we're like, Sophia, why are you wearing that heavy jacket? Doesn't make sense. She's like,
you tell me, Rose.
You tell me, Rose. And she just like opens up her jacket and flashes Rose. But then Rose, great line, says that, was Sophia naked under that jacket? Or does her dress just really need ironing? I mean, it was...
What a beautifully, like a perfectly painted picture.
It really was.
It's so funny.
Yeah, and
that's cartoon.
It's perfect. It's perfect. It's a perfect sort of structured opening scene of this.
I also love the idea of a woman in her 80s wearing... going commando on the bus.
Yeah.
Just like...
Well, I noticed too, when Sophia sat down, they really had nothing on under her. Yeah. I mean, she had a quite little slit happening. Yeah, it was an Angelina Jolie Oscars dress slit going on.
Leg action.
Leg action. So Sophia leaves, and Blanche comes back with Laszlo. What's Laszlo's last name? I don't know.
No, it is Laszlo.
Is it just Laszlo?
I don't know.
Who the fuck knows? So Laszlo, this Hungarian sculptor that Blanche works at the art museum, and he brings her, or she brings him home to meet the girls, I suppose.
And
she's going to start posing for him. Yes. So she's going to start posing for him, and that's why this all starts. So he comes in, and Dorothy is just, they're all like just
taken.
Going crazy. Their libidos are just...
Yeah.
I mean,
meanwhile, it's like Dorothy and Laszlo look pretty similar.
Yeah.
Like, stature-wise, fashion-wise, it's like, pretty much a mirror image.
Laszlo is played by Tony Jay, who, the very gay-looking person, but also Dorothy-esque. And he was a successful, very successful voiceover artist.
Which I can believe, especially because you said, you know, he did voiceover for The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Uh-huh.
And you look at him,
the
and
Disney
you're like...
film.
And he looks like the Hunchback.
He did the Rugrats movie. He did Beauty and the Beast. Never major characters, all minor. But like,
that
just goes
living.
To show you, it's a sweet living.
It is,
very sweet living. So, and Dorothy. Anyway, he comes in. The girls are all like gaga, and so Rose says something.
Oh, that she says Dorothy wanted to take up sculpting as a result of his lecture.
Yeah.
And Dorothy says, don't be silly. You know, what are you talking about? She says, you know, well, remember you said you wanted to buff his marble anytime. You said you would, you know, shine his something and buff his marble anytime. And Dorothy does a great, silly, and grabs Rose's hand and squeezes it so tight that Rose falls to her knees in agony.
Another display of Dorothy's bionic strength.
Brilliant.
I mean, there are times, there was a recent episode, I forget which, where she's hugging Stan and he says something ridiculous. You're hurting me! It's like, this woman has, like, Hulk
strength.
Well,
so again, that's why I got the tattoo. Because she's... Like, Jim Colucci actually corrected me, and this is very upsetting.
Jim Colucci, to give you guys reference, he wrote the Golden Girls, I have it here, the Golden Girls sort of book that's out of trivia of the Golden Girls, and has a new one coming out, I believe, in April. He's going to be a future guest on the show.
Yeah, and he bummed me out because I was telling him why I got my tattoo.
Yeah.
Because I said that as a comedian or comic actress, Where am I going? B was so sort of generous in the way that she let the writers, she serviced the writers by letting them turn her into this like this
Hunchback
mannish,
character.
Yeah, bionically strong drag queen of sorts.
Yeah.
And that really serviced the story. And then Jim told me in real life that she was not a fan of that happening and it would often lead her into tears.
I don't know if I believe that.
I don't know if I believe it either.
No offense, Jim. We love you.
I love
you. But
I don't know how someone would let that go on for so long.
She wouldn't let that go on.
She was clearly more sensitive than people thought her to be.
Yeah. Oh, she was very private. That I know. I mean, you watch any of the interviews with Betty White or Rue McClanahan, they always say that she kept to herself. She was very private. She never really associated much with anybody else. But
she was friends with Rue.
But that doesn't... Well, yeah, but she was friendly with everyone.
Yeah.
But she was very, very private.
Yes.
So much so that, you know, there are things about her past that we're learning now on her death that no one knew, you know? And so, I don't know. I don't know if I would agree that she didn't like it because... She built her entire career
she
on
She did,
it.
That's right.
Even Maude was like that.
That's true.
Where they would make fun of her body and her chest and
that's my tattoo.
And All in the Family.
It.
The whole All in the Family was...
She's painted as a mannish, liberal hippie.
And, you know, she made a career out of it.
Yeah.
So if she doesn't like it, well, you know, live in that house. I'd live in her mansion if
yeah,
role.
I'll take it.
Sorry, B. Love you, B. R.I.P.
And if anybody hasn't, they should really Google the video of her. It's like barely a 30-second commercial that she made to speak out against Premarin because it's made of horse urine.
That's right.
And she's with a horse.
We'll post that on today's podcast.
She,
yeah.
She's literally holding her sunglasses in her hand. Like she, you know that she was like, all right, let's do this. I'm doing it once and we're done. She doesn't even like put her sunglasses away. I'm B. Arthur here to tell you not to use Premarin. It's made of horse urine. Goodbye. Basically, that's the commercial. It's great.
So Laszlo leaves, and we learn from Blanche that he's going to be sculpting Blanche. She has this gold key that apparently he gives out to his studio.
Loft, his studio in Miami. Okay.
I mean, that doesn't seem like a logical...
No.
Because that means you're just giving strangers keys to get naked in your place.
Exactly.
Like, we have apps for that now.
Again, a lapse in logic.
Yeah, yeah. But...
to me.
Like, you know, Carrie and I, when we often have our disagreements about things, it's usually based on she's more logical and I'm more like, suspension of disbelief, whatever, moving the story on.
Well, let me also say, yes, that's true. But for me, that's why I love 5, 6, and 7, because Mitch Hurwitz came in.
Yeah.
And
Mitch Hurwitz, who was the creator of Arrested Development.
And my favorite thing about Arrested Development is the same thing. It's that lapse in logic that is actually absurdist.
Yeah.
And when they go absurdist, it's just, personally, it's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
And so that's...
Also, Mark Cherry was a part of that.
Right. I just love that absurdist
Mark Cherry,
twist.
Desperate Housewives creator. So we learned this.
In Log Cabin Republican.
Oh, really? Yeah, love Mark Cherry. So we now are in the kitchen, and Sophia's sitting there with, I think, a thing of peanut brittle and orange juice.
Right, very traditional practical joke gags.
Yes, and Dorothy walks in, and she takes the orange juice, and it's a sippy cup or a drip cup or whatever the fuck they call it.
Once again... What?
There is a thing. It's a sip cup that, like, it drips when you drink out of it. There's, tiny holes or something in it. Whatever. But, so Dorothy drinks of it. She gets orange juice on her. Ma, why would you do that? Dorothy's wearing this white sort of lace sort of baggy thing that I would totally wear.
Sure.
That you know, doesn't get messy at all.
Well, you don't see a drop of orange juice on
Not
her, even
one.
Though she's swatting it away.
Yeah.
And she also... It's shot so frenetically that the shot of her dripping the juice looks so fake that they barely... Like, they just sort of breeze past the fact that not only does she do it poorly, but that she's swatting away at stains that aren't there.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
What? It's... Come on. Commit. And you know the costume designer was like, that's like a Chico's original.
Oh, speaking of the... You were saying the stage manager, what was it? Zbornak?
Kent Zbornak.
That's where they got the name?
I believe so.
I didn't
Otherwise,
know that.
Otherwise, that would be quite a weird...
coincidence.
Yeah, but I think I read that that's where they got it. They just
Kent
picked...
Zbornak. We can ask Stan. Stan Zimmerman was the first season writer, and one of the first season writers. He's been a guest on the show.
He's also...
He would probably
Kent Zbornak
know.
Still works now.
Really?
As a producer, I believe. Yeah.
I want to get Kent Zbornak on the podcast.
Get him.
Kent
get
Zbornak,
him.
If you're listening. You're not. So they do this. Blanche walks into the kitchen then after, you know, Dorothy's got all messed up, and she says, Dorothy, you're a mess. And then Dorothy says, this is one of the practical jokes. Sophia was like, oh, I didn't notice the orange juice.
Very
I mean,
good.
Just sort of, again,
yes.
creating this picture of Dorothy's a beast
ugly,
of a human
right.
being.
Yes.
And there's really not much that happens in this scene other than that Blanche is going with Laszlo to the studio.
Doesn't she try to get Blanche to drink the juice?
Oh, yes. The whole time she's trying to get Blanche to drink the juice, and Blanche is just sort of like, she keeps talking, and then finally when Laszlo arrives and she is going to leave with Laszlo, she takes a big gulp of the juice.
Nothing spills,
and both of them are like, what? And then Dorothy takes another drink and gets it on herself. I don't know how.
I don't get what it is.
I don't get, like, maybe, I don't know. So Blanche goes back into the living room. Rose is there. Laszlo arrives. And Blanche says, oh, well, Rose will entertain you while I go, whatever. Setting up for the second part of the story, which is Laszlo is going to woo Rose.
Yeah, he talks Rose into posing for him as well.
Yes, because she has this innocence.
Innocence and naivete.
The whole time I'm just thinking, like, and maybe it's because I am, you know, the homosexual, but this guy is such a homosexual.
Yeah, he's given off them vibes.
It's one of those, like, gayer European vibes.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, you could just be European, But you probably put a dick in your mouth.
I would not say, I mean, I don't think he's as gay as the fella in the end who turns, you know, who turns out to be partner. His lover.
Yeah, lover.
Lover is what you would say in 1987. but he's definitely got them vibes.
Oh, that just made me think of AIDS.
Yeah. Yeah,
makes me thought of it.
Yep, definitely.
Wow, PTSD. I would never
call anybody my lover, ever, ever, ever.
I would do it in a joking way.
Yeah, in a joking way.
Yeah, like if I had a guy that I was seeing, and this would be in a sci-fi film. If I a sci-fi biopic of my life, a
steady boyfriend.
If I had a steady boyfriend, I would call him my lover. Tell you guys. Anyway, so Laszlo woos Rose, and it's sweet and innocent, blah, whatever. Blanche comes back out. They both go off, and it's sort of like, oh.
Now we've got competition.
We've got competition in the naked department.
Right.
So then they come back. There's like an act break there, I think. Yeah. No. Is there an act break there? Yeah, there is. Yes, and they come back, and it's now Blanche is furious. Blanche, well, there's been more practical jokes.
Yes, yes.
The peanut brittle one.
It's all misdirects.
Yeah.
It's all, as we say in the writers' room, misdirects.
Misdirects.
She offers Dorothy some peanut brittle. Dorothy says there's going to be, you know.
Oh, the anti-kaleidoscope?
Yes.
There's an
kaleidoscope.
Who has an anti-kaleidoscope?
Nobody. She says, oh, and Ma, I know you too well. You're going to be... Gonna put charcoal around my eyes like a raccoon.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we'll sit down. She said, I'm too good for your practical jokes. Sits down to whoopee cushion. That I will say
was really funny.
Unbelievably funny.
Very funny.
Whoopee cushion is always funny.
Always.
To a fault. It's never not funny to hear somebody sit down and fart.
Especially when Dorothy was setting it up by being
exposition.
You can't get me, Ma. I'm too smart for you. I am on to every one of your tricks.
I mean, the thing about that episode to me is that as funny as it is, it still has that, it feels very elementary.
Yeah.
Like, it's so clear that she's setting up the joke for her to then sit down and fart.
I totally forgot that was coming, to be honest.
But you did?
I totally forgot
it
was coming.
It's so obvious that it's like, uh-huh, no, I don't do this,
but see,
I don't
that's
do this.
Where I think the difference, you're probably more like Carrie in that I do this in movies, I do it everywhere, I will just like... I become blind to the story, and I let my brain just go with it, and just let him present it to me, and I don't see things coming because I'm so innately present in the story.
Whereas I'm, I think, innately critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or cynical in terms of art and waiting.
This may be because why you have a job and I don't.
No, get out of here.
No, I'm joking. Not really. So Dorothy farts, or the whoopee cushion farts, and whatever. Blanche comes home, and she's wearing a Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, no, she's wearing like a pastel layered
Joseph
and the Amazing Technicolor dream coat.
It's very baggy.
It's horrid.
It looks like sherbert.
It's horrible.
She's wearing baggy sherbert clothes.
She looks like a sort of Art Deco diner design.
Yes.
She looks like one big Art Deco diner in
She looks like a table at a diner.
Exactly.
In Florida.
It's terrible.
Yeah. And we're not talking tablecloth. Like, she looks like the seats match with the table, match with the pole, with the wallpaper.
And the building itself. She looks like architecture. It's bad. It's not good. But also, we know from B talking about it that the clothes are expensive.
Yeah.
And that's probably why they didn't want her to spill on B's blouse or...
That's
whatever
a good
you
point.
Call that thing. I mean, they were like, we don't want to stain this. We have to return it to Chico's. I don't know if Chico's was around in the 80s, but...
It probably was.
I would love to know where they went shopping for those things.
We could probably find out.
You know, it's probably like department stores.
You know, I don't know. I mean, all of those women had dealt with major designers on shows before and stuff.
True.
So it's like... Like, you know, Betty White was having, like, Bob Mackie shit happen. Bob Mackie apparently designed Mama's Family first season clothes. Yeah. Bob Mackie was, like, a television costume person.
Wow. Wow.
Carol Burnett. All of Carol Burnett was Bob Mackie.
Oh, that, for some reason, I did know, even though I don't...
And Cher, the Sonny and Cher show. Bob Mackie.
Oh, wow.
It's like, you know, he had a thing from low to high.
Right.
He was designing shit. So, like, I bet you a lot of it, some of it probably is original designs.
Right. Although that
this episode,
that
not so much.
Wearing looked like a McQueen joke, like an Alexander McQueen prank. Like, what?
We're
wearing?
Putting Lady Gaga in this?
Yeah, what is this?
Yeah, so Blanche is furious because she snuck a peek at Laszlo's designs, and she goes
I like it, she's like, went through his things, and nobody even, like, budges.
No one questions. She goes into the living room, she explains to Rose why she's so upset, and it's setting up for the reveal that Rose is also sitting for Laszlo, where Blanche says, you know, I saw some of his designs, and this woman was flat, and wide hips, and frizzy hair, and obviously not me. And then Rose then confesses.
She's bursting at the seams to confess that it's actually her.
Yeah.
That she's been the one, you know, posing for Laszlo. And then just because, and this is why I guess it rubs me the wrong way. You know, the scene sort of erupts in a fight and an argument, and then Dorothy comes in to break it up, and then the final reveal before they cut to commercial is that Dorothy has also been posing for Laszlo. He just happened to give her a key, like, you know, earlier that week or something.
There was some way she said it where she, like,
no, it's going to be me.
Yes. Yeah. So they're fighting. Blanche and Rose are fighting about, like, who it's going to be and who the design of the sculpture is going to be. And Blanche is furious at Rose, and Rose is furious at Blanche. And then finally Dorothy comes out, and she's like, what's going on here? What's happening? And then they confess what's happening. And then all of a sudden there's this pause moment. She's like, it's going to be me.
And she does
this weird key song hip thing.
Yeah,
where
her very,
one hand's on
the
hip.
When B goes theatrical, you're like, oh, there she is, like, Miss Theater herself. She brings out that, like, when she said whoopee cushion, you're like,
whoopee cushion.
Oh, yes, that's right, classically trained.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why in another episode she says process instead of process, and I always bump on that. In the process. That she says. I guess I realized in the process.
Carrie was able to pick up in the episode where they hired a maid. She would say,
Marguerite. I hated that. Marguerite.
Marguerite.
Marguerite. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
no,
Marguerite.
Pretty.
Marguerite.
I mean, she's just being, you know, like, think about it. Like, you make up your own words.
True.
People remember it. We're talking about it today. If
it's
she
true.
Wouldn't have done that, no one would remember
That's
it.
That's true.
You know? So.
Oh, Marguerite.
They're all furious what's going on. They're all posing, and they're all competing with each other, essentially, on who he's going to choose.
Right.
And so there's this funny bit where Blanche, they go into the kitchen, and they're fighting back and forth, and Blanche says something about, you know, of course he's going to choose me. He wants a beautiful, delicate, worldly, feminine, and then she sits, and it's just the whoopee cushion.
Yeah. Again, another break in logic, because we've seen that earlier in the scene.
Yeah.
Dorothy had sat on the whoopee cushion.
Yes.
And now Blanche had sat on the whoopee cushion, and Sophia had already left the room, so it's who blew up the whoopee cushion? Or as
maybe
we would
Sophia
say, who blew
did.
Up the whoopee cushion?
Whoopee. Whoopee. Sounds like a chef.
Yeah.
Would you like a whoopee pie? Uh-huh. It doesn't, the logic is gone, but maybe
okay.
Sophia did when they were all fighting in the living room.
No, because we saw her leave.
Oh, that's right, we did, didn't we? Wow.
She went back to her room.
Yeah, So they're all having this moment. They decide to confront Laszlo.
So they all march down to his art
grab
studio,
your bags. We're marching to the studio.
And they go down his studio to berate him.
They go to the studio that looks like something from a, like, weird French film. It's like this. There's just paintings and sculpture shit.
They threw one of those, like, ceramic masks on the wall.
Yes.
That, like, kabuki mask. They just were like, throw it on the wall.
Like, I don't think Miami studios look like that.
No. Even the door was painted, like, pastel tiles.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they go in. Laszlo is surprised to see
these
all
women.
Of them.
Yes.
And then they admit, like, the jig is up. We all know that you're
you've
doing
been double
this.
Time, triple timing us.
Yeah, yeah, and they're furious. Of course, Blanche is like putting it on hard, being like, "Well, of course you're going to choose me,
right?
You know, whatever." And
that's what I think bums me out. But I guess I bump on that's such that rigidity, that structure where. But Blanche says, of course it's going to be me. And, Rose, of course it's going to be me, Dorothy.
Yeah.
And they stand in a line, and it's just so mechanical.
Yeah.
That I just prefer the times when the show is more fluid and has room to.
Well, that might be a case of the writing in this episode.
Absolutely. Which
yeah.
is why I'm saying I like when the writing is just more, you know, malleable.
I mean, if you think about it, it's the end of the year.
Yep.
They're in their middle of the third season. They're
yep.
a huge hit.
Yeah.
Anything they do is successful at this
yeah.
point. Like, they're not they're not worried about not being picked up.
No.
And so, you know,
we it's took not a break bad. For a it's week. Not bad. I'm it's just not saying bad. As a writer, it's a technique that I don't like.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Blanche has a funny line here where she is commenting on why that Laszlo, of course, was going to pick her because he once said that, commented on her perfect champagne-sized
her
orbs
champagne glass
of loveliness.
Yeah, of loveliness. Yeah. Her tits.
Her
and he
tits.
Says, and he says, I never said that.
Blanche is very direct.
Yes.
In this scene. I mean, there's
We'd be better for it if we had that directness.
Yeah. Oh, we would, wouldn't we?
We really would.
But I mean, if you think about it, if I went up to a guy, Elliot and I hang out pretty regularly, and if I was at a bar and Elliot was like, yeah, go talk to that dude. And then I did, and I was like, do you want to see my perfectly sized champagne-orbed loveliness?
That would be fantastic.
It would be fantastic, but I don't think I would be getting laid that night.
It depends on who has a sense of humor.
No one
You're
does.
Right. That's the thing. Now, if that was a woman that you went up to...
See, I do think if I was straight, I would have more luck with sexuality. And like,
yeah, me too. Ding, ding, ding. Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Women are more apt to joke, laugh, poke fun at themselves.
Yeah.
I think so,
but they're also, I mean, this is just two men talking about women, so maybe we should get a woman in here. But I feel like they can also be brutal to each other.
Yes, but I'm saying
that I don't find men are.
Gay men are.
Gay men can be, but there is this sort of, but I don't feel like gay men, even the catty mean ones,
yeah,
care enough to, like,
absolutely
even be
true.
That mean.
Right.
Whereas women will, like, go out of their way to, like,
so
take someone down.
I think you're right.
Yeah, so I think, but that's obviously a sign of our patriarchal society,
yep,
and all that.
Topple it!
So at the end of the scene, Blanche's are really fun. So, well, Laszlo says that, no, I don't know who I'm going to pick. I haven't built the sculpture yet, so you're just going to have to wait until the...
Well, he basically says kind of what he says in the following scene, mm-hmm, which is, I'm borrowing from... Well, he says in that scene,
yeah,
I'm borrowing from all of you to create the ultimate sculpture.
Yeah.
And
they don't know that yet, but they're he's essentially indicating, like... And of course, if any rational person, if there's multiple designs, you know that... Or even, like, in any piece of writing, like... It's a caricature is always a compilation of, like, many different people.
Of course.
You know, and many different styles. So the women are just being a little dumb here.
Yeah.
But Blanche has a really funny line after he says that and they're all leaving that, are you familiar with the nude Picasso, the painting, Picasso's painting, nude woman playing a piano?
Right.
Well, that nude woman was me, and I wasn't playing a violin. I wasn't playing a violin. Think about that when you pick up your chisel. And, I mean, it's essentially like, when you start picking up your dick,
yeah,
think about what I can do with,
yeah,
that dick.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can jump on that deep. And there's also, Dorothy has a line, nude body.
Nude. That's, again, it's theater. Nude. The way she says nude.
Nude. So now we're all at the gallery.
Gallery.
Big reveal.
It's big. Hideous gallery.
1987, like, you can tell there's neon and that
nasty
weird sort of, like, what were those glasses, those walls that were, like, kind of made of glass, and there were mini squares and, like, fuzzy glass in between it.
Oh,
so,
it's
like,
hideous.
You know what I'm talking,
yeah,
about?
Like, ugly deco French doors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So ugly.
There was that there.
With a background that was, I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be Miami or just a painting of Miami that was in the gallery because it was clearly a...
Yeah,
painting.
Yeah.
Which,
so weird. So anyway, they're at this gallery, and they're all looking around and commenting on how beautiful the art is, and then, of course, Sophia, continuing this practical joke B
right
story, says, comes up to Dorothy and says, Dorothy, look at this! And it's this, apparently, like a sculpt, like a handheld sculpture or something that's very expensive, and she breaks it.
They also don't even give us enough time to see her holding anything.
No, I don't even
She's
know what
like,
it was.
Whoa, whoa,
it looks
whoa
like a vase.
I don't know what it looks like, a piece of paper.
It was something weird.
Something flat.
And so she drops it, breaks into a million pieces.
After saying it was $10,000.
Yes, it was $10,000. And everyone, like Dorothy's like, Ma, what do you want?
Ma, when will you learn?
You can't pick up things that don't belong to you. And then Sophia's like, gotcha. Like, it was all a joke. But then to, like, double... This is actually a pretty good practical joke.
Yeah.
Actually, this one was probably the best. Where, so she breaks it, and then she tells Dorothy, haha, gotcha. And then... So Dorothy's like, and then the guard comes up and says, ma'am...
You're going to have to come with me. Like, he's going to arrest her for breaking something.
For breaking something that was actually very expensive. And Dorothy then falls for it again. And then they both start laughing because the guard's in on it now.
The guard's in on the joke, and Sophia gives him, like, $10.
What's the worst practical joke that's ever happened to you?
To me?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, somebody planted a birthday gift for someone else to make it look like it was from me.
Oh.
In ninth grade, it was a women's lingerie that they had planted to make it look like I had a crush on this girl.
Yeah.
And I was just so humiliated that I was, like, furious.
Really?
Even they were all like, oh, we know it's not from you. But it was, like, panties for a girl who turned out to be, like, you know... She swung way much more toward Les anyway. But I was just like, itch. I hated it.
Wow.
It. Yeah, killed
my mother. There's two practical jokes that my mom loves practical jokes. And
your mom and George Clooney.
And George Clooney as well. You're right. There's like an order of two. My mother once put grape Kool-Aid in the shower faucet.
What?
And so you turn purple when you take a shower. My mom did that.
How did she get water into the faucet?
Well, no, you take off the shower head and then you put like grape Kool-Aid in the actual shower head.
Oh, the
and
powder.
Then it has to be dry for a while. The powder, exactly. And then you put it back in because there's no water in there. And then you take a shower and the water comes out.
Brilliant.
Yeah, my mom was really good at that. But probably the best one was my first bar mitzvah. There wasn't many bar mitzvahs in my hometown.
Sure.
And I didn't know anything about bar mitzvahs at the time. And my mom told me that they circumcised the boy at the bar mitzvah. So I believed her. Knowing me, she knew this. I would tell every single person at the bar mitzvah that they were going to circumcise Steve Edelman. I was telling all my friends, you know, they're going to circumcise Steve later.
Oh,
like,
my God. Forever.
And then I was just sort of telling it just to tell people because I like to gossip about that. And then I started becoming very concerned about, like, oh, that means there's probably going to be blood. And, like... It's like a surgery. Like, do they do it in the middle of the party? Oh. Like, this is gross. I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
And so I went up to his mother, and who I was friendly with because I was friends with Steve. And I was like, Miss Edelman, hi, great party. but I'm Mormon, and I don't think religiously I can see Stephen get circumcised today.
You said that to her?
I said that to her, and she was shocked, she started laughing, and then she told me to come with her. And this is actually, coincidentally, not only was it a great practical joke, it was also the first time that I realized, oh, I can tell jokes and, like, get a laugh. Because she started laughing, and then she took me to this group of women. Now I know it was, like, all of Stephen's, like, the Jewish sort of princesses and queens and everybody in his family, these beautiful women, big, big, black hair, and very, very Jewy. And Stephen Edelman's mom was like, tell them exactly what you just told me. And so I do, and they all start laughing. And
you were dead serious.
I was dead serious. And I was mortified because I knew at that point that it was a joke.
Yeah.
That I had been, my mother had done a joke on me. But also, in retrospect, I look back on it, and that sensation that every comedian, I think everyone gets when you make someone laugh. It's just, it's addicting.
Yeah,
and
it's so good.
It's so good.
It's great.
And I think it was that moment that, even though I was furious with my mother, I was also like, I can make people laugh.
Yeah.
I can make adults laugh.
Yeah, you can sort of get people to feel joy.
Yeah.
Without having to do too much.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You have to go to law school or medical school.
Be a doctor. Yeah, nothing. So, so Sophia does these practical jokes, and now it's time for the unveiling, and they're all very anxious to find, the three girls are very anxious to find out.
Who did he use?
So they take off this blanket off of the sculpture, and it is not an impressive sculpture.
No, it's one pretty ugly, banal looking.
It looks like the kind of sculpture that like, if you and I were forced to do a sculpture, we would probably do it that way.
And potentially a tad better. With a tad more character to it.
Yeah.
But it's very clearly supposed to be like a smudged, you know, a nebulous kind of undefinable woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't look like any of them.
It doesn't look like any of them. And if you look at them and what they're wearing in this scene, like, you can't tell. So Blanche is wearing this... Well, Sophia probably looks the best to me because she's wearing this, like, black sequin number.
Yeah.
That does... It feels very heavy on Sophia's body.
Sure.
But then Rose is wearing this green sort of, like, sequin-y, tight sort of dame dress. Yeah,
which I think
she's worn before. Yeah. And Blanche is wearing, again, Blanche is not showing her body in this episode. Blanche is wearing some pink sequin.
She looks like MC Hammer, honestly.
Yeah, she does. She really does. And then Dorothy, of course, is wearing 7-layer outfit. And so you can't tell from the sculpture looking at them which one it is. Because the woman has a big bust, but she also has, like, big hair and, like, thin. I mean, it's just, you can't tell. And then finally, the girls go up to Laszlo and says,
"Who is it?
Who is it?" And Laszlo then admits, you know, it's a little bit of all of them. Yeah. What did he say? He goes down
it's
the line.
It's all
like,
of you.
Well, he does a thing where
I don't like this. Where he says, "At first, he says it was it's Dorothy, and oh, she, you know, she, oh my God, of course, I knew it was me." And then he says, "But then I dropped her, and then I decided it was Blanche. Oh, me.
Yeah.
And then I said no. And then and it's like we get it. Like we get the rhythm.
And then Rose is finally like, "It's me," and she's like, "No." He's like,
"It's,
no.
It's all of you.
All of you."
And they're all and then he tells them basically that he used a compilation of all of them and that he thinks the reason they're all such good friends is because they're so
they complement each other so well.
Right.
Which I was waiting in that moment because they tend to do this whenever there's like a friend. Which, you know, you think is cheesy, but I actually kind of like it, where they all, at the end, there's this realization of, you need each other.
I love it. And so they hold hands.
Yeah, they need each other.
They hold hands and need each other, and then Blanche still defects.
Of course. Says,
now, if I may ask, is there anyone here in whom you might be interested romantically? And he says, yes. And they all sort of wait to see who he chooses.
Yeah.
And then the curator walks over... sort of chantays over and says, we're a hit. And he gives the gayest affectations I've ever seen on a person.
He, because they wanted to make him obviously gay.
Yeah.
Rip Torn.
Or Richard Simmons.
Yeah, I was like, Rip Torn. Rip Torn is that weird.
Oh, Rip Taylor.
Rip Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think they purposely made him extra gay.
So gay.
Not in a pandering way, but in a way to fully realize that this is a gay relationship.
He is, as the professional gays would say, serving face.
So yeah, as he was serving face, he comes up to Laszlo and says, "We're a hit," and then he like prances off,
right?
And then Lazo's like,
"I thought you knew."
Just
walks off, and they're like,
"They should have known."
Of course, they should have known.
Yeah,
but then you see them all, and their nipples go soft. And it's back to the house for some cheesecake. They're like, "Peace, we're done here.
Let's get out of here."
We see this ugly ass statue. He wants a dude, and we're out. They're like,
Their nipples go soft. So I will say something about this actor. Monty Landis played the very effeminate partner, and. Funny little fact about Monty. Monty's last credit on IMDb, it says he's still alive, but his last credit on IMDb is The Golden Palace. He's not playing he's not playing that character.
No.
He's playing somebody else. So
they recycled their actors. We've talked about
they
that.
They did a lot. Oh yeah, we talk about
Palace
that quite
was
often.
The ill-fated, very poorly done.
Yeah.
Not poorly done, it just didn't work.
But I do think that The Golden Palace led Don Cheadle to an Academy Award. Here's my theory.
Absolutely.
So
I don't even need a theory. I believe it.
So Don Cheadle got his first major break on The Golden Palace as playing the hotel manager.
Yeah, in the hotel where Blanche, Sophia, and Rose decided to sell the house and manage this seaside hotel in Miami.
Yes, and so they hire, or maybe, I forget the setup, but Don Cheadle is helping them manage this place. And
with their crazy chef, played by Cheech Marin.
Cheech Marin. And then, fast forward, like 10 years, and Don Cheadle receives an Academy Award nomination for Hotel Rwanda.
Yeah. We know he worked in another hotel.
And we know where.
We
and
know
we
where.
Know where he
that
trained.
Was Hotel Miami, bitch. Hotel Miami, y'all.
Miami Golden Girls to
Rwanda
genocide. It really helps, I think, establish.
It's one and the same.
I
basically,
can't wait.
He figured out how to work in the hospitality industry.
I want to ask Don Cheadle if that is what led him to an Oscar.
He would, I imagine...
He would get offended and make it a Rwandan genocide issue.
And you'd be okay with that.
I would be okay with it because it would be great.
You'd have gotten a rise out of Don Cheadle.
Which nobody else can.
No. Can't seem to break that man.
That man is always Don Cheadle.
It's just cool. He's just cool.
He's just cool. I did see a picture of him in an upcoming film about Miles Davis. He looks really good.
Yeah.
But he's probably still going to be Don Cheadle.
He's still that kind of guy that I think white people will just say they like.
Yeah.
Because they want people to know that they're okay with people of color.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, I mean, it's okay. You can also be honest if he's not your favorite actor.
Yeah.
That's okay. But I think people use it as a crutch. Use him as a crutch.
I think so, too. I think you're right. Yeah. So... they both leave, and Laszlo says, I thought you knew, and then they're all kind of shocked, and then Sophia has a great line here, where she's just standing there, like, watching the whole thing happen, and then she comments on after he says that, after he admits that he's gay, and says, can you blame the man? He looked at the three of you naked for a month. Which is perfect.
It's pretty great.
So, they get out of this, they're back in the kitchen, Sophia's sitting in the kitchen, Dorothy walks in, and Sophia's like, my practical joking days are over, they're done, I'm swearing this off, no more! And then
Dorothy has some juice.
Yes.
And so Dorothy goes for the juice and says, Ma, did you leave something burning on the stove? And Sophia goes, what? Turns around, and then Dorothy very quickly switches their cups.
Yeah.
Sophia turns around, and Dorothy goes, oh, sorry, my mistake. Well, bottoms up, which she would never say when having a drink of juice with her mother. But sure, bottoms up, goes in for the drink, sippy cup. It spills on her.
Yeah.
Once again, we don't see the spill. We don't see any stains.
No, it's nowhere.
But then Sophia kisses her on the head and says, never change, pussycat.
And that is
a lovely ending to the
lovely
episode.
Ending. Very
I love
sweet.
It. I do love
you know,
it.
A lot of times when they... Because they could have ended on Sophia saying, that's a great last line.
That's a great line.
Great last line. But they often... I feel like maybe to fill time, I don't know what, they do this where they have this sort of like little mini
a
moment that doesn't need to be, like this B story doesn't need to be wrapped up.
No.
It is wrapped up.
It's already wrapped.
She's going to continue doing practical jokes for years to come.
Right.
You know, but they do this and, you know, it works well. And
I think it works great.
That's the end of the episode.
I love that. I mean, I love when they end a couple other episodes too where it's like, even just like, I forget which one it is, but she goes, you know, good night, pussycat.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
I just like that. It feels
calm. I think there was a recent episode where Rose is the Charlie... It's the last episode that we just watched.
Recent meaning...
Recent, yes.
Meaning...
Yes. Recent podcast.
Yes, right.
Not actual Golden Girls episode. No, it was the one where Rose... Charlie's like old war buddy comes back to town and almost swindles her out of money and stuff. And
Buddy O'Rourke with the Irish accent, even though he's from Boston.
Yeah.
What? That come from?
I know we talked a lot about that, and I feel. I mean, Irish. I don't know anything about Boston.
Nobody has that accent.
Nobody.
If you're born in Boston,
yeah.
No one's. I mean, who's to say Buddy O'Rourke was born in Boston?
Yeah.
But still, it's like here's Buddy O'Rourke from Boston, Massachusetts. What? And his eyebrows creep me out.
His eyebrows drew a shadow over the entire episode.
Oh, I don't like it.
Yeah. So, good episode. Not the best, but basic. It's a basic episode today.
It's a
basic
episode.
At the end of every podcast, we do a golden takeaway. It's a moment of truth or a nugget of inspiration that you can apply to your life or the lives of our listeners. I will start just to give you an idea of what to go with. So, my golden takeaway from this episode is... You know, a lot of friends of mine, I'm very forward, you know, and I will just bluntly ask someone, are you gay? And it's people...
Hey, you gay?
Well, no, if I'm in a social situation and I don't know the sexuality of someone and it pertains to something that I'm saying, or if I genuinely just want to know, I will ask, are you gay? And I don't think that's offensive.
Have others been offended?
Yes, many people in my lifetime have been offended
by
that.
Women or men?
It's mostly men. And I find that straight men, of course, if you don't know, you know, and then if everything I've done doesn't indicate to you, I'm not trying to flirt on you, I just genuinely want to know, like, can I talk to you about this?
Yeah.
Or, like, is this going to be something that's you're going to make some weird straight dude comment to?
Right.
So I'm just saying that I feel like sexuality, sure, is a private thing that you can remain private with if you want to so do so, but... Who gives a fuck? It's just where you're diddling someone. Like, why not just be open about it? And
well, it's such a inherent part of your life, and it's such a it's a pretty basic question.
I think it should be a basic question.
Although,
just like,
at the same time, I can understand if somebody wants to not tell you. I mean, it becomes more suspicious because you're like, I'm not asking you to, like, show me your anything.
No. But, like, for example, tonight, you and I, we're going to, like, a gay poker thing.
Yeah.
Right? If I was with someone that I thought was genuinely cool, and I would be like, I wouldn't say, hey, do you want to go to this poker thing? Because I don't know if they're gay or straight, so I'm going to ask them. I'm not going to be like, hey, you want to come to this gay poker thing? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right.
You just ask, dude, are you gay?
Right.
And I think we should take down those barriers. So I'm saying the girls, someone, Sophie, someone should have been like, yo, Laszlo.
Right.
You like to lick it or touch it. Like, tell us one way or the other.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Yeah, but...
It would have saved us this whole...
It would have saved us 23
moderate
minutes.
Episode, yeah.
Yeah.
You want my golden takeaway?
Yeah, please.
My golden takeaway is that I want to now return to those stores that sell practical joke gags.
There has one down the street.
Yeah.
It's called Wacko.
Yes. Yeah. I love that store.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I love these stores that I used to go into as a kid because they were kind of like for the nerd kids, you know, like little tricks and stuff like that, like invisible pens and all that shit.
Yeah.
And not that I need to go out and buy a whoopee cushion
the
at a 32-year-old
ice
man.
Cube
yeah.
thing.
I yes.
love that.
But these stores bring me joy, and I want to go to the stores that sell whoopee cushions.
See, the problem, though, I think with that is, and this is more of a statement of where we are as a people.
Sure.
But, like, for example, if I had a party here or whatever, and I invited people over, and I put a fly ice cube in someone's drink,
yeah.
I guarantee you someone would be like, did you check to see if that was BPA free?
Right. And then they'd like shit talk you on Instagram.
Yeah,
something.
Of course.
I was at a party at a former friend's, you know, the home of a former friend. When I found an ice cube, it's like...
Yeah, and that's what I think, that's what closed those stores.
Yeah, you everyone's know? A little too PC now.
A little too PC. But
I would love to see a whoopee cushion. I would be fine if somebody pulled a whoopee cushion joke on me somewhere.
Be careful tonight.
And now
then.
I know. Here,
be
careful what you wish for.
Yeah, because it might happen at the gay poker night
tonight. At a gay poker night, that might be a little embarrassing. Embarrassing.
It would be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, when I'm around gay guys, I have to put all my walls up.
It's really?
That's how I thrive. No, I'm kidding. I mean,
have you ever accidentally farted while having sex? Or it's been audible?
I don't remember, but chances are.
Of course not. I have.
Chances are.
I think everyone has.
Yeah.
It's a normal thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
just saying. So if someone whoopee cushions you, maybe me, at a gay poker night, like.
They're like, oh, he's down.
He's down to fuck. He's clear. Wow. Thank you for doing this. I'm
oh,
so excited
you.
That
you
you'll be coming to... There'll be some really fun people coming up.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And Kara will be back intermittently. I mean, it's sort of like back and forth.
And I always love seeing our engineer who you can't see, Fraser the cat.
Yes, Fraser.
Making sure everything's taken care of.
He's lazy as fuck.
He's asleep.
Just chilling out there.
Just lets us talk.
Yeah, he's just like us doing our thing. He's great. So where can people find you on the interwebs? And what do you have coming up that people can look forward to? I know second season of Younger's out.
Second season of Younger has begun.
It is super great.
Thanks.
Love it.
Thanks. Yeah, I think people
I read the
gonna...
entire season.
Yes, you did.
And I think
well, you
it's
worked
amazing.
On it.
A little bit. Yeah.
You did. You worked on it.
Yeah.
And then...
There's a really funny thing coming up with a dick.
With a dick,
I'm not going to say anything else, but I'm really...
Good stuff.
I cannot... I'm telling so many people that... Because I just will be like, oh my God, you know the Younger show. We'll talk about the Younger show. And then I'll be like, just look forward to a dick.
Oh, yeah. We've also got big guests. We've got Matthew Morrison from Glee.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And David Wayne.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, it's good. Martha Plimpton comes back a bunch.
Martha Plimpton?
Yeah.
Yay, that's exciting.
And then Broad City starts in February.
Yeah.
So I'm on that, too.
And that's been renewed for, what, two more seasons?
Two more seasons.
Job security.
Yes. And then, also, I worked on Time Traveling Bong, which will be out in...
Oh, that's... So, Alana, which is Elliot's sister, that's a new show coming out.
It's just a mini-series that will follow Broad City, I think, around April.
Okay.
So, it'll just be a three-episode show.
It's great. Like
an hour and a half.
So many fun things coming up.
Yeah, good stuff.
That'll be great. That'll
yeah.
be great. And where can people follow you on the interwet?
The interwet. The interwhoopy.
Interwets.
I'm just like, everything's at Elliot Glazer. ELIOTGLAZER. I don't use Twitter a lot, but feel free to follow.
Yeah.
And then Instagram, same thing. And Facebook, same thing. It's all just like flyers for shows that I do.
Gonna be fun. Thanks again.
Thanks.
For doing this. And guys, I am H. Allen Scott. on everything. And while you're following me on Twitter, which if you aren't already, that's stupid. You can go to outonthelanai.com for all things Golden Girls. You can also go to outonthelanai.com/store to pick up some awesome GG apparel. Make sure you go to our Facebook page and like us there, because those things matter these days for some reason. And also, we know that there's been an issue with the iTunes podcast app not going to my episodes, so let us know if you have problems with that and we'll help you out with the workaround there.
I want to see if Fraser has any plugs.
Fraser, do you have anything to say? Fraser, he doesn't give a fuck, he didn't even move his head.
Is peeing right now.
Oh, he's peeing. Yes, it's weird when he pees, because I'll be like, I often have nothing, no noise happening. I'm very quiet in my apartment. I just like to read and, you know, I'm very bookish and alone and dying. And I will hear, like, Fraser peeing, and it'll be the weirdest thing because it's such a forceful piss.
Oh, yeah.
It's
Fraser's got the eye on the eye on the prize.
He knows.
When he goes.
He knows what's up. And guys,
did not know cats could poop that big until I babysat Fraser.
His poop is huge.
He's
a huge cat.
Yeah, but again, like, until Fraser, I was not a cat person per se, and he totally changed my vibe towards kitties. I love Fraser. And
it's the only cat you
need
a lot.
I love him.
Yeah.
But I also could not believe the size of his shits.
Massive.
I thought cats pooped like pellets.
No. His shit is impressive. But he's a big old cat.
He is.
So, you know, he's whatever. He's a man. And guys, go to headgum.com to listen to other great podcasts. And thanks to Spreaker for hosting this podcast. And remember, you probably don't know this, because Carrie and I do this at the end of every episode. And remember, stay golden.
Stay golden.
Bye, guys.
That was a HeadGum podcast.